That was the beautiful sound of referee Ben O'Keefe bringing Saturday's Rugby World Cup semi-final to a close, sending the Springboks through to what is a dream final against the All Blacks this coming weekend. A game that for large parts the Boks had no business winning, looking down and out for the chunk of that contest against England. This is the Inside Pass. Thank you very much for joining us again. My name is Lloyd Bernard, sports editor at News 24, and I'm joined in our Cape Town studios by Hammond Mostert once again, and we'll be chatting you through just what was one of the most memorable days of Bok rugby. Hammond, I mean, that game, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much as the previous week, they burgled that win. Nick Mallett summed it up pretty well in the studio afterwards, and he said that was probably South Africa's worst game of the World Cup. I mean, they were outfoxed tactically by England. They lost the aerial battle. They looked quite horrible, quite frankly, but found a way to win. I think that's it's probably the key element here, is a team that somehow keeps on winning. They should have lost to France. They should have lost to England, but they won. The scoreboard that matters at the end, and that's a sign of a championship team. You know, that gets through these. You know, England had chances to put them away. They just couldn't. They probably should have. But yeah, like the Boks have. There's something there that there's a belief in that team that doesn't matter what situation they find themselves in, they can get out of it, and they somehow did again on Saturday, even though everything looked against them.
So Alex Ferguson used to say during his Man United golden years that, you know, when the team was playing poorly and still coming out with a 1-0 win, that's when you knew you were kind of on for a championship potentially, and you know, that certainly was the case for the Boks on the weekend. I mean, 1 point in it at the end of the day. Just some huge moments in that game. I mean, you know, 68 minutes, you're 15-6 down, and not really looking like, you know, finding a way back into the game. And then just boom, boom, you know, a few scrum penalties from Oxenchair, Vincent Koch coming on, turning the set piece around. A hell of a touch finder from Andre Pollard to set up a rolling maul. The breakaway from Dion Ferry leads to an Achias Neyman try. All of a sudden, you're back in it. One more scrum penalty, a 50-meter penalty from Pollard. And out of the fire, all of a sudden, the Boks into the final. And really a dream World Cup final, playing the All Blacks in a decider for the first time since 1995. I mean, at the start of the tournament, there would have been very few people, I think, predicting that final.
Yeah, look, especially after the opening match when the All Blacks lost quite convincingly to France, and they didn't really look that good. I mean, tactically they were horrible. Barrett's kicking was pretty much atrocious, and it wasn't a good New Zealand performance. And if you went there and said that they were going to play South Africa in the final, I think it would have been long odds for that, you know. But they've gradually, as the tournament has progressed, they've found their mojo, and they look really impressive now. I think that Ireland win has given them a lot of confidence. Obviously, they've thrashed Italy in the pool stages. The Italians somehow always plays poorly against New Zealand. There's something there that they just can't handle. But then everyone said, it was a blowout team that they played against. But then against Ireland, they were written off again beforehand, and they won that match. They never trailed in that match. So they're very dangerous. Obviously, Argentina wasn't the best semi-final opposition for them. It's obviously because of the draw and the way it all panned out. You know, we essentially had two finals in the quarterfinals, the South Africa-France game, New Zealand-Ireland game. Those should have rightly probably been finals, or could have easily been. So they were always going to have an easier semi-final. I don't think Argentina were up for it this tournament. They were just lucky with the draw that got them there. I mean, they basically had to beat Wales and Japan before that to get to the quarterfinals. So no surprises there. But probably surprisingly, the Boks struggled to get past England. I think if you look at, you know, the way that the Springboks can operate, and you just didn't think that it would happen. I don't think they were complacent, but I think maybe the fact that, you know, the previous week's game against the French took a lot out of them. You know, it was obviously a match played at an incredible intensity, and they were just flat. You know, the first most flat I've seen a Springbok team in a long time in those first 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I think Scott Berger said so in the studio as well afterwards.
You almost got the sense that England, and you know it's not true because of how much this means to the box, but as a neutral looking on, you would have got the feeling that England just wanted it a bit more in that first half.
Yeah, it certainly looked that way. But yeah, sometimes it is like that. You know, you can be psyched up and everything, but sometimes the body is just not, you know, the strain that they maybe took the week before just took something out of them. And
yeah,
it was raining. Obviously, we said beforehand, we said on Friday that if it's going to rain, it's going to be a leveler and it's going to suit England. Wouldn't say it's not supposed to suit England more than it does the box, because I think the box are pretty adaptable in the fact that they can play different styles. You know, they've got a massive pack of forwards, they've got a solid set piece, but it just wasn't working. They didn't have the upper hand in the scrums until Ox came on in the second. I mean, that was one of the best substitute performances that I've ever seen in a rugby match, to turn a game like that.
And
the lineouts were a shambles. I mean, Bongi was throwing, I think there were two skewed lineout throws, and there were a few lineouts which they did win, but it wasn't clean balls, so they couldn't really set up mauls from it. So it wasn't looking good. I mean, the ball never went wide. Someone mentioned, I noticed it on Twitter during the match, that Jesse Creel, like at the hour mark, probably never even touched the ball.
Yeah, I think the commentator made a point of it the first time he got the ball. He said, I think that's the first time Creel's touched the ball today. We must give credit to England as well, a side that was completely written off before the tournament. Yes, they were on the right side of the draw, but if you look at their prep, the loss to Fiji going into the World Cup, the Six Nations, the Eddie Jones drama, parting ways with him, turning to Steve Borthwick, a young coach, without much expectation at all going in, I don't think any English fans would have really expected them to, A, get this far, and then, B, run the world champions as close as they did. And it really was a very good tactical performance that they executed very well for a big portion of that game. Winning the aerial contest, as you say, the physicality, they stood up to the contests and actually made themselves known in those battles. And, for a big chunk of the game, looked like they were going to get the job done and pull off a huge upset. Talk to me about that substitution from Rassie and Jacques on 30 minutes or 31 minutes or whatever it was. What a call that is. You've backed a fly half for a Rugby World Cup semi-final. He's been your former South African fly half all season. On the bench, you've got a guy who's done it all before, but is very, very, very short on game time. It's the type of substitution for me that if you lose the game, there'll be questions asked. As you know, hindsight is always gives you that opportunity to poke holes in decisions. If you lose the game, it's the wrong call. But in the end, it's proved to be another Rassie and Jacques masterstroke. And really the right call when you look at the conditions, not set up for a Marnie Libok game. That 50-meter penalty to win the game is Pollard's. Libok probably doesn't have the range for that. But I mean, were you surprised when you saw that call come that early in the game?
No, I wouldn't say I was surprised. I mean, I would have expected it at least to happen at halftime, because it had to happen. It just wasn't, conditions just didn't suit the way Libok plays. And tactically, England were dominating that game. It had to happen. So I think they just made the call to say, listen, rather now than at halftime, because maybe the damage would be even more. Although it's not like Libok was leaking tackles or anything like that. He just wasn't dictating the game tactically and with his boot. And obviously Pollard has a lot more experience playing big games in weather conditions like that. I think that's key. It was raining, it was wet, and we weren't going to win that game trying to play an expansive style of play. So I guess at the end, vindicated. I don't think, not sure if Libok would have been able to put that kick over at the end from 50 meters. I mean, it was a massive pressure cooker kick. Pollard really showed his BMT in that scenario. And it now makes it an interesting call for the final. You know, you've got to ask the question, you know, I'm almost inclined to starting with Libok again, so you can have Pollard at the end, because I was actually thinking about this yesterday. Like, we haven't seen a World Cup match with extra time in a long period, actually. So if you have that, maybe that, I mean, we've seen how close these games have been. They shouldn't rule out the possibility of maybe extra time, and then you want a player like Pollard to be there.
I think Jacques said after the game, I might be wrong, but I seem to recall him saying that, you know, you're not going to beat the All Blacks with penalties. Kicking your way to an All Black win. If you beat the All Blacks in the final, you're going to have to score tries. And that could point to especially if it's dry conditions, and you know how the All Blacks are going to play, and if you want to take them on at that kind of play, almost like the France game, in the first half of the of the France game, then Lubbock must come back into the reckoning. You know, if it's going to be a game where there's lots of running and the box reckon, geez, we're going to have to get 3-4 tries here to come out as champions, then that does make sense. I think that works well, having the banker on the bench to come on, whether it be on 60 minutes or 30 minutes, to start kicking goals, to either, wrap up a game or keep you in touch. We're going to go to Paris now, where our guy on the ground, Kaniso Truku, will be joining us. He's had a weekend. Trux has been taking power naps in between stories. I don't think I've ever seen a guy working this hard on a sports tour in my life. So keep it coming. Trux, are you still alive?
Yes, I am. I'm very much alive, kicking and standing.
That's good to hear. Trux, what was it like? I mean, just an incredible game of rugby, something that the box pulled, you know, a victory out of defeat when it looked like there was really no hope. I mean, your match report must have been a good few hundred words in there, writing up a Springbok loss, and you must have had a change quite late on.
Well, I can freely admit now that for the last 6 minutes, I had splinters in my arms and hands. I couldn't write the match report I resolved to watch and let the game unfold. I written a paragraph on the Springbok was not winning. And then I realized that this may not be such a great proposition. Let me just leave the top part open. I had everything else, the detail at the bottom, and then I just left the top detail. And I was like, let's see how this match pans out. And there was that bit of cathartic release that South Africa had won. But more importantly is that the rugby world has got the final it most decently deserves. I think there has been a big sense of entitlement from the Northern Hemisphere nations based on how competitive they've been in the inter-World Cup years, where they felt that they've now got the handle on the Southern Hemisphere teams. Therefore, they should translate to them doing well at the World Cup. Unfortunately, that hasn't been the case. And I think it's kind of come through in the commentary from pundits. I mean, Clive Woodward, let me give him the prefix as a mark of respect. So Clive Woodward has been leading the charge, saying that it's now time for the Northern Hemisphere to take charge of a Rugby World Cup. It's easy to do so from a financial perspective because, I mean, the center of the money game is up here. The economics of the game are run up here. The politics of the game are run up here. Unfortunately, though, what happens in the boardroom and how things pan out on the field are two different things. And I think what New Zealand and South Africa have showed is that they may not have the financial muscle at the moment to be dictating terms in the game, but what they do have are the raw and the crude material to ensure that the Rugby World Cup, the William Webb Ellis Trophy, will remain in the Southern Hemisphere, as it's always been the case since 2007.
Trux, talk to me about those final kind of 15-20 minutes. I mean, was there a sense, could you just feel the momentum changing in that stadium? Could you feel the energy in that stadium changing? And speak to me about the performance of Juan Oxenchair and how he, you know, wrestled the momentum back from the All Blacks through what was just an epic scrummaging performance.
I think having watched the game again and gone through that particular last 15 minutes, I think the box, as much as they were emotionally spent from the France game, I mean, they had to give that game everything just to get through. There were so many things they needed to fight in that game. They always felt that so long as England don't score a try, they were within the chance. And unfortunately, England did not look like scoring a try, nor did they want to score a try. And 15-6, as much as it required two scores, so that's what I only realized, that all they needed is 10 points. And 10 points was called out on the field. Is a conversion, a penalty, and a try. And all those ingredients came together in that last 10 minutes. But they had to build, they had to fight for the ascendancy, because, I mean, England were pretty much dominant. They had parity the scrums and they were dominant everywhere else. They were not making any mistakes that allowed the box to have easy points. So, I mean, the box, gutter by gutter, street by street, they fought. They pulled back the English from their lofty position into the mat. And then once they got them into that scrumming mode, because also England were playing a game that kind of took them away from playing scrums. I think they'd learned very quickly from the Ireland and the France game that it's all well and good to scrum against the box in the first half, but the longer the game goes on, the less you want to scrum against them, because that's when the box could control and contain the momentum. I think once the box got a hold of the momentum of the game, the tempo of the game through the kicking game that improved significantly in the second half, then it became easier for them to force scrums, because the box were happy to lose the ball in contact. Because they knew that if they turn over the ball and they're cutting them, attacking momentum, they're going to retrieve that ball back through a scrum and through a penalty. So effectively, the box went back to fundamentals. And I think the one thing that Jacques Minaba actually said, and I think he said it even before the quarterfinals, that every team could cause can score tries and make the game look sexy. But the teams that maintain the fundamentals best will be the teams that make the final. Yes, New Zealand has, to quote some in his piece, his lovely piece this morning, where he said New Zealand had a glorified shadow run against Argentina. One needs to remember that New Zealand had to what? Be strict in the defensive fundamentals. They kept Argentina out for a good 6 minutes. And the first opportunity they got, the counter-attacking is part of Rangers' fundamental. The first counter-attack they got points. The second counter-attack they got points because of what? Their defensive fundamentals. Yeah. And also against Argentina, they were dominant in the lineup, they were dominant in the scrum, so they competed in the fundamentals.
Okay, Trucks, there's been, a story that you had to cover over the last kind of 24 hours as well. That is not the type of story you want to be covering now heading into a Rugby World Cup final week. But after the semi-final, England flank Tom Curry accusing in the semi-final Bongi Mbonambi of a racist slur during the game. There's obviously been a lot of reporting out of Europe and then since in South Africa around what this means for the Boks as they head into the Rugby World Cup final week. What do we know? Where are we? What needs to happen? Do South Africans need to be concerned around the possibility of potentially Bongi facing some punishment around this, if it was even true? There's no evidence at this stage that any of these accusations are in fact true, but where are we, and why? What can we expect to hear out of the Springboks next as well? I mean, can we expect them to come forward today and deny this accusation?
Look, a lot hinges on whether World Rugby will have got a complaint from England. Number one, remember that World Rugby also reserved the right to chase a side, to still cite a player, whether or not another team has actually laid a complaint. So I'm seeing that Tano Manana is actually tweeting. I've put up a request from Dominic Rumbles, who's the chief World Rugby chief communications officer. With regards to the England have filed a complaint. Tano Manana stated that England will no longer lodge a complaint due to a lack of corroborating evidence. However, though, whether England left a complaint or not, World Rugby still have the power to actually cite. So South Africa aren't out of the water quite yet.
But World Rugby, I imagine, would need some if England don't lodge anything formal World Rugby's way, then for World Rugby to act, there would need to be some tangible kind of evidence of Bongi having said what he's alleged to have said.
Look, I mean, again, that is also true. But also, World Rugby would also, as the governing body, if there's an issue of a racial slur that is made, there will also be in a catch-22 situation of, because of it's a South African player, do they actually take this route? Because I think also there's always the notion of how fine the lines are when it comes to racial slurs. So I think World Rugby may also be duty-bound to actually take the complaint forward, even if England don't actually have corroborating evidence, because if they are seen to be not acting against racism or discrimination across all forms, it may put them in a properly bad light. So it puts them in a very tricky spot, to be honest. So when the England have, and hopefully Dominic does give us clarity within the next 20 to 25 minutes, World Rugby could still be duty-bound to see whether the complaint was legit. They may also have other means of finding out whether this actually took place or not, because remember that the hearing also may involve players actually having to testify.
Yeah.
It's not just whether it's the hearsay from a recording that wasn't picked up. There were players in the field. There must have been players at some point in the vicinity of that particular conversation who could either corroborate positively or negatively.
Sure, it sounds like there's going to be a lot happening in the next kind of day or so on this story, and obviously not not something you need in a Rugby World Cup final week for the Springboks as they're trying to prepare for their date with destiny and a 1995 rematch against the All Blacks. That was Kaneso Trucker joining us from Paris. Thanks, Trucks. We did this podcast from the Foresters Arms in Cape Town on Saturday and the hours leading up to kickoff, and really was just amazing to see, you know, hours before the game started, we had people flooding through the doors dressed in their Bok colours. I mean, there is very much a sense of unity and just a fantastic energy around this team at the moment, and just a very huge support for the Boks and their quest for another World Cup crown. Here's what Springbok captain Siya Kolisi had to say on that support after the semi-final win against England.
Definitely, we've definitely been feeling the support. We've been seeing the support on our hotel. We have a video where, you know, where it's one of our sponsors gave us a screen so we can see the support, what's happening back at home. And we know the whole continent is honestly behind us. You know, some of the videos where people just sit and talk about how they feel and what it's doing for them. And I don't think there's any country in the world where people that don't have DSTV will go to a mall and all sit together, and people keep the mall open and they sit there and they watch us play, you know, different from people from different walks of life. And I think that is exactly what's fueling the team. And yeah, it's special because we know we're not only representing South Africa, but the whole continent in general. And if we do become successful, the whole of Africa does win. So we do see the support and we do appreciate it.
That's how much it means to Springbok captain Siya Kolisi, and very clearly to the whole country. Herman, it is a dream final. It means this much to the All Blacks as well. And you couldn't really have, you know, two teams matched in the way that these teams are in terms of what rugby means to both of those nations. I mean, you couldn't have scripted a better final.
Yeah, I mean, rugby is a religion in New Zealand. And, you know, I think the All Blacks, a lot of New Zealanders, I think, after all these years, are still hurting about what happened 28 years ago in that final, because they were hot favourites to win that. And, you know, there were obviously those claims of food poisoning with so-called Susie coming in and disrupting the All Black camp.
Why did you have to go there?
Those things have, it's 28 years later, but there's a few reports floating around now where they're still confirming that, you know, so people saying that they should be wary about what they eat this week. And so, I mean, they're going to be fired up. And I mean, we must remember the Springboks thrashed them 35-7 at Twickenham just before this tournament. And that's, you know, normally that was a record defeat that the All Blacks suffered there. Not only against South Africa, but I think it was their biggest defeat ever in terms of points margin. So they're going to be smarting from that result. And the thing is, history in the last, since the professional era started, history shows you that whenever you beat the All Blacks by, you know, not necessarily a record margin, but convincingly, they always hit back the next game. And especially with the Springboks, normally when the Boks have put a performance over them like that, they lose the next game. We saw what happened last year in when we convincingly beat them. I think it was 26-10 in Nelspruit. And then the Boks were punted as heavy favourites for the next match at Ellis Park and they lost. So I think they need to be very wary of that. But I think they do have the ingredients and they do have the personnel to beat this All Black team. And they showed it in that match against Twickenham. At Twickenham, not against Twickenham. But anyhow, but then again, it is a final. And you've mentioned that, yes, the Boks are probably going to have to score a few tries because the All Blacks on the counter-attack, they're obviously the best team in the world. And I think it's going to be very tough to play a whole 80 minutes without, you know, leaking a try against an All Black team with the way they're playing at the moment. So we're probably going to have to score a couple of tries. I don't think we can expect a 15-12 like it was in 95 where there was, after 100 minutes of play, there were no tries scored. I'd be very surprised if that was the way, unless it's raining heavily and you know, then it obviously becomes something different. But still, you know, I think there's too many playmakers in both those teams for there not to be a few tries scored. So yeah, but it's going to be very interesting. I see the bookies are very close. They've got the All Blacks as slight favourites, but only just. So that tells me that they're not entirely sure what's going to happen. And you know, we've seen with the Springbok team, you can't write them off. I just don't think that. Sort of worried that maybe the Boks' luck in a sense has run out. If they're going to trail by 10 plus points, it's going to be very tough for them to come back. So they're going to have to start well. It's not going to be like what happened against England. If they trail by 9 or 10 points heading into the last 10 minutes, I don't think they're going to be able to sneak a win again. So they're going to have to make sure that they start better. But yeah, look, I mean, it was 4 years ago, they played a pretty average semi-final against Wales, and they scraped through 19-16. There was also a Pollard penalty at the end that I think it was also in the last 5 minutes that that saw South Africa snuck through, and then they obviously faced England in the final, and not many gave them a chance because England obviously beat a highly favoured All Blacks team in the semi-finals. And then the Boks were written off beforehand, and then they put up that performance in 2019, which was really impressive. So maybe we're going to see that again. You know, maybe it was a little bit of a good thing that they struggled so much for so long against England. So they won't be favourites this week. I think the Springbok, an underdog Springbok team, is a very dangerous one. Mm. And that could maybe just play in South Africa's favour. But it could be a coin toss.
When you start thinking about the history between these two sides and how significant 1995 was to world rugby and Springbok rugby in particular, and just the rivalry between South Africa and New Zealand over the years, the fact that it's Jacques' last game with the Boks before he leaves, you know, the race to being the first to four and World Cup dominance between the two teams, the selection talking points that we'll have between now and the weekend. There's so many themes around this game, and it's such a special rugby date that we really hope that we can get past the Bongi story as quickly as possible, and that gets put to bed and to one side, and that we can start looking ahead to what is just a very, very special game of rugby. Looking at the selection, wouldn't be surprised if there would be a few changes. I mean, we speculate on this every week and
get it wrong mostly.
And we get it wrong most of the time. But if you factor in a couple of the guys looking a bit flat in the first game, the obvious area is probably Pollard for Lubbock, maybe Fafurena, you know, something like that. Perhaps Jasper Visser back in. I don't know, but you would expect maybe a couple of tweaks here and there.
I would think Faf de Klerk would probably come in at scrum off. The Greinach probably didn't have the best game, but I mean, like I said, most of the players look flat, so you can't drop all the players. And I think they're going to have to think long and hard about the selection at fly half, obviously. I'm inclined to say that they should start with Lubbock again, just simply because of the fact that Pollard needs to be there in those last 20 minutes. If Pollard starts, he's going to have to play the whole match, and then Lubbock can only come on then, obviously, if Pollard gets injured. So I would start with Lubbock at number 10, and then bring Pollard on probably early in the second half. And then if you have the scenario of, you know, a late penalty that needs to be kicked, then you have him there. And if you have the scenario of possibly extra time, then you've got Pollard there. Because when it gets to those latter stages and it's still tight, you know, I don't think then that tries is going to make the difference. Then I think it's going to be on who can slot maybe a drop goal, who can kick a pressure cooker penalty over. So, but elsewhere, I think there's been calls maybe they should try Kane and Moody, maybe to give them some firepower in the back line. But I mean, he hasn't played for a while as well,
yeah.
So he could be a bit rusty. To now just throw him into a World Cup final would be very tough on him. And a guy like Lukanya, he still hasn't played, so I mean, it wouldn't be fair on him and on Jesse Krul to just play him in the World Cup final. So I don't expect too many changes. The same with Ox. I think Ox is a brilliant guy to bring on in the second half. You know, like we've talked about now, like the Springbok, and Kanyiso said as well, the Springbok scrum gets better as the match wears on, and especially in those that tail end periods of the second half, if you can bring a guy like Ox on who's fresh,
yeah,
you know, he comes on and he destroys his opponent like he did on Saturday against England.
Yeah.
So I don't expect too many changes. I think it's a bit like they're going to opt for the consistency like they did last week. But maybe one or two here or there, I'd probably think at scrum off. If I have to guess, maybe Faf will come in at scrum off. Maybe not any other changes elsewhere.
It's been the most incredible tournament so far. South Africa with 1-point victories in both the quarterfinal against France and then the semi-final against England. If they do go all the way, it will surely be their greatest World Cup drive yet, just given the opposition they've had to get past at this World Cup with Ireland and Scotland in their pool as well. New Zealand stand in their way, and what is a dream Rugby World Cup final this weekend. We'll be building up to that game throughout the week. This has been the Inside Pass. We'll chat again tomorrow. All the best. You are